Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, November 27th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 15 minutes or so. We go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we kick off a new work week here coming out of a holiday weekend. I know it can be a little bit of a struggle for a lot of people out there, so hopefully you're having a pretty good Monday out there. A couple of things I want to bring to your attention here before we get things started on today's show. The first is that I'm just using my phone, no headset here today, so hopefully everything coming across the air just fine. But the second is that over at bangthebook.com, lots of good content available for you. I just put up my college football and NFL opening line reports for the 2 weeks here that we've got conference championships, and then also another slate of NFL action. Also over there at the website, check out those free contests that we have available. Just sign up using your email address. You can get involved in those daily streaker contests, monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won, cash prizes available for those. All we do with that email address is send you out a newsletter, tell you about what's going on over at the site. So please feel free to check those out. And while you're doing that, take a look at the matchup data section that we have as well. All the sports covered, side-by-side comparisons of these teams, stats, per-game stats, trends, all sorts of different things to help you bang the books. Finally, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio is presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you head on over to DSI, use that promo code BTB and the number 25. You get a $25 free bet just for signing up, 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook, and 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests coming your way here today. The first, Mr. Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible for our NFL Week in Review and Monday Night Football Preview. Joseph, how's it going today, man?
Doing great, Adam. Dave, the chalk keeps winning in the NFL, so hey, I'm sticking with those favorites, man. It's doing really well in that regard.
It is remarkable. You know, I was talking with my boss yesterday. We were kind of pissing and moaning about the Super Contest card again, which is just a weekly occurrence at this point, because it feels like everything that we thought we knew about betting the NFL is wrong this year. Like you said, chalk keeps winning. Situational spots almost don't even seem to matter here. You know, it also seems like we rarely have the good teams playing down to inferior competition. Patriots cover 17. Philadelphia easily covers 2 touchdowns. We did see it a little bit last night between Pittsburgh and Green Bay in the Sunday Nighter, but overall, it feels like these good teams are actually, you know, blowing out who they're supposed to and then playing exciting competitive football against comparable opponents.
Hey, call it boring, but yeah, it's like, oh, New England, 7-4 ATS. You know, Carolina is kind of getting back to where they were a couple years ago. I mean, outside of those Rams, and sure, Philadelphia is just, they're a whole different animal. I'm going to put them out in a cage somewhere. Hopefully they don't beat the crap out of my team as well, but it is kind of these good teams sticking to, and just, I don't know. I don't want to call it boring because I enjoy it, because, like, at least some of it, to me, at least on my end, is starting to make sense. Like, geez, Minnesota, like we talked about on a previous show, that defense is just winning at the line of scrimmage. They're setting the tone in games, and it's like, man, that, to me, that's fun football to watch.
I think one of the big things is that it's kind of a catch-22, because it's exciting because you know that the playoff games should be really good this year and that, you know, hopefully we'll wind up getting a really good Super Bowl. But on a week-by-week basis, Gabber, I mean, from a fan standpoint, if you like watching good teams, you know, carry the load, that's fine. But betting, I think, is difficult. But I think overall, you know, as we look ahead to the playoffs, which are, you know, what, about a month or a little over a month away now, that's kind of the solace that we can take out of this, is that, you know, we should see Philadelphia going toe-to-toe with a Minnesota or New Orleans or a Rams team, something like that. That's when, you know, it kind of pays off that we have teams that are as good as they are.
Yeah, and get rid of some of those double-digit numbers that are just tough to get on the right side of a lot of times.
All right, well, let's take a look here at this Monday Night Football game, which doesn't exactly profile to be a real exciting one. And, of course, you know, that was kind of the thought with the Sunday night game between Green Bay and Pittsburgh, and that wound up being one of the more exciting games of the weekend, with Pittsburgh nowhere near covering as a 2-touchdown favorite. Houston and Baltimore here on Monday night. Baltimore, 7.5-point favorite, pretty much across the market. A couple stray sevens with some extra juice out there. And, you know, again, we've talked about this a lot throughout the season, and we're obviously going to start with it here. The Baltimore defense is legit.
Oh, there's no question, and we put that out there before. Dean Pease, big fan of what he's done, just the job he's done. It's such an intricate defense to watch, but the ultimate question remains in all these Ravens games. Can they score enough to win? I think the Texans, they've got some holes, namely at corner, safety. The issues in that back half remain. So the Ravens, I mean, they just basically have to neutralize Clowney. They find a chance to take some deep shots with Wallace, Macklin. I think there's opportunities there. It's just speaks so much about team identity. The Ravens, they want to run the ball. They're dying to run the ball and pound teams, but they got some questionable running backs right now, and they don't have those tone setters they used to have. Kalichi Osemele, I'm now in Oakland, Marshall Yanda on injured reserve. So that same punch, it's just not there. So unfortunately, Joe Flacco, he's just got to play well here. I know that this guy's getting paid a bunch of money, franchise quarterback, but that's the problem. He's a little bit overrated, definitely a lot overpaid, and they really have to call on him. And they, once again, kind of have to go oppo. This heavy set, run power team that loves play action, they need to turn that around, I think, and kind of approach use the pass to set up opportunistic runs if they can kind of get into that mode of thinking. If they do, I think they score well enough, because that on the other side, the Texans are just a level down. I mean, obviously the quarterback, everybody knows, but Will Fuller, if he's not playing, that's electric speed. I don't care what defense, you know, we talk about the Vikings being great. The Jags have a nasty, but they don't have a guy that can run with Will Fuller all game long. That is just a rare type of deep speed. And when the Texans are without that, I think that's where they get in trouble. You know, DeAndre Hopkins, man, that's a rare commodity. And I like to consider myself a bit of a wide receiver aficionado, just because all the fantasy writing I do, the dynasty, the keeper leagues I have to play in. Boy, you got to scout wide receivers well to do well in those leagues. And Hopkins, man, I don't care who he's matching up against tonight. Just get some popcorn, have a pop. It's worth the show. He is always worth the price of admission. But in this game, how he's going to beat the brackets, how he's going to beat the double teams, that's going to be an issue. And then problems for the Ravens defense potentially. C.J. Mosley only got in one solid practice this week. That is their best linebacker, arguably one of the better in the league there. He is, I think, the ankle injury, and then Jimmy Smith, he's kind of slowed up by an Achilles the whole year, and Terrell Suggs is a mystery, I think, on this injury report. He's downgraded because I don't think there was an issue before Friday, and all of a sudden he's limited, and then Saturday he didn't practice at all. So I would not be surprised if Taxaw, they call him, doesn't even play. So that's something to think about on that other side of the ball. But other than that, I expect Dean Pease to kind of dial up the pressure. That if we know anything about Ravens history, they tend to do really well against statue quarterbacks. And I think Tom Savage lives up to that bill. He's not creative in the backfield, and they've got enough pass rushers even without Suggs to get to him. So yeah, it's, looking like a lot of Baltimore in this one.
You talk about DeAndre Hopkins, and I think it's kind of incredible. You know, I was against Atlanta yesterday. I took Tampa Bay and got front-doored in that game since Atlanta scored late. But Julio Jones just went off. 12 catches, 253, couple scores. We'll talk about the Falcons here in a few minutes. But it is amazing to me how these guys, like Hopkins, like Antonio Brown. Now, of course, Antonio Brown's got a little bit more of a supporting cast now, and especially with Le'Veon Bell there. But Julio Jones, you know, A.J. Green, these guys that draw so much attention from the defenses, and they still go out there and eat. I mean, it's incredible to watch. I mean, no Will Fuller this week again for the Texans. So it's going to be the DeAndre Hopkins show. And that's what I'll be curious to see is, you know, we see these hallmark wide receivers, these, I don't know if DeAndre Hopkins is ever a Canton type of wide receiver. Antonio Brown should be, you know, Julio Jones should be as well. But you see these Canton type guys just go out there and shine no matter what. So, what do you think the plan here is for Baltimore to try and slow him down?
Like I mentioned, it's got to be a bracket. You have to have two out there and just say, hey, I don't care if it's Bruce Ellington, Braxton Miller's out there in the slot, the Fedora Wicks, whoever, you can just go ahead and let them have at it. We're going to make sure we've got two men on him at all times because he's such a rare bird, specifically in how many snaps. it's been going on since college, too. If you watched him at Clemson, he doesn't take plays off. Sammy Watkins over there at Clemson, Martavis Bryant, the Pittsburgh receiver, all those guys were in and out. It's all rotating around Nuke Hopkins, and what he's able to do and keep coming back, it just even when he doesn't take the plays off, he's still at the same clip every play. Physically, he is just, he's rare, and it is, like you mentioned, just consistent it is no matter who he's, his opponent, no matter really the quarterback, he's making plays. And, I you know, you can't say it for every player in the league, but he's worth a highlight reel every time he sets foot on the field.
All right, so one other thing to ask you about Baltimore here, and the Ravens, if this number stays 7.5, will tie for the highest number that they've been asked to cover this season. Of course, they did cover 7.5 against the hapless and hopeless Cleveland Browns in week two. Last 3 weeks here, you've got a 40-0 win over Miami, lose to Tennessee 23-20 in a very interesting game there, and Baltimore actually snuck in the back door to push or win for a lot of people that had that number higher than 3. Last week, the shutout of Green Bay 23-0 on the road to cover 2.5. This is a big number, though, for Baltimore. You mentioned Joe Flacco. You mentioned that, you know, there's not much of a downfield offense at all whatsoever for Baltimore right now. So the question kind of becomes, you know, how low can Houston keep this game to try and stick within the 7.5? Because you don't expect the Texans to do a whole lot. So how much can this Texans defense do, you know, to stop that short passing game of Baltimore and take away the running game?
That's the question. I just don't see the Texans stopping them often enough. And if Baltimore's able to turn that field and switch things around on one of their, you know, namesake turnovers, I think it just that should be part of the team. It should be in the crest, you know, like what we do is turn the ball over and get defensive touchdowns. If that happens, then yeah, sure, obviously that they'll cover. But just looking at how much the Texans continue to give up, and what was it, the show we were talking about, like guys that should affect the line, Whitney Mercilus, J.J. Watt, what this defense is without them, that really takes the bite off that pass rush. And once guys like that are out, they're giving up 41 to Seattle. The Colts scored 20 on them. Well, obviously, we can take the Rams out. They're just scoring on everybody. But still, even in their last game, with the Cardinals found a way to get points. So, yeah, I've got to think with a quality defense that they find a way to cover this game would be my lean. But if it is, what is it, over a touchdown, be awful tempted to buy that hook.
All right, well, let's take a look back here at Week 12 and talk about some of these teams and some of these results as we like to do on this week in review part of the show. The Blaine Gabbert Bowl, as you referred to it here in the notes that you sent me, Arizona, Jacksonville. This is one of those games that I don't think it's going to get a whole lot of run that Arizona won 27-24 as a 6.5-point dog at home. One of the things that this does tell me, though, is when you have teams that are trying to set new standards, you have teams that are trying to create that different type of culture, and that's what Jacksonville is trying to do this season. The fact that Jacksonville just didn't look good for long stretches of this game kind of makes me wonder, you know, what type of echelon we want to put this team in.
I think this is another one, Reset, that yes, the Jags were looking good, but we had mentioned previous, like there's still issues. And two things, just you mentioned, thank God there's a culture change. You know, Doug Marrone, flat-out winning in spite of Bortles, and just, you know, he deserves a ton of credit there. But you can actually count on a few things in every Jaguars game is what I took away from this. You can count on one or maybe two Blake Bortles turnovers. Like, you can just set your watch to it. And then the other one, we talk about defenses that their hallmark is, you know, scoring. The Jags find a way. Some have, like, hell or high water. It's a pick six. It's a fumble recovery. They're in the end zone, and those defensive players are dancing. So it just keeps happening too many times. So at least there's something, you know, to what to expect in Jags games. But Bortles, the guy is amazing. You could run a bloopers reel just from this Cards game. He's falling down, tripping over his feet. He actually did on a bootleg. He lost his footing, fell on his butt. He got up because there was amazing protection for an incompletion, but the other one, the sprint right go, he throws the ball, and this Tyrann Mathieu right in his face picks him. There's a lot of quality, laughable material from Bortles, but one thing that's happening is that he is willing himself through these games just with his scrambling and his rushing, and anybody that saw the highlights knows, like, there was some rushing touchdowns that if Blake doesn't make a move on the guy in open field, I mean, they're basically running the zone read on a lot of those plays, and it's just, you know, there's a lot of what not to do in Blake Bortles' footage, but you can't take away that he's a tough kid, and he's had to make some plays. But to me, this is an interesting game because you mentioned, like, you know, teams that, like, there's a culture change. I just don't think the Cardinals have given up on anything for some reason. Like, there's a lot of want to there. Chandler Jones is a manimal, number 55, that pass rusher that they got from New England. He's just a total difference maker. You have to double team a guy like that. And I liked what I saw some of Blaine Gabbert. I mean, yeah, there were some big time mistakes, but he's a more mobile option than Stanton. He's got a little freelance to him. But he's got a bad offensive line. You need someone that can extend those plays and just buy that extra second or two. I think they're going to benefit from giving Blaine a look. Just Blaine's going to benefit more than anything, but you could do a lot worse for a third string quarterback. I mean, there was a really nice deep ball you got to Brown, beat all the coverage. Sure, it may have been overthrown, but it was exactly over the deep safety. So he's doing what he's supposed to do. And I guess if I'm taking anything away, like I call it, it's the Gabbert Bowl. He got his revenge. Unfortunately, Calais Campbell scored a touchdown in the game but did not beat his former team. I'm seeing, I don't know, just a little value maybe in Arizona. You know, what are they playing? The Titans, who, boy, I was dead wrong on them the previous weeks. That Marcus Mariota, I don't know what we're seeing. If I'm getting points maybe with Arizona against Tennessee, I'd be tempted to take them. And, yeah, Arizona's a team, I don't know, there's just a skosh of value. I'm trying to find little, as we mentioned, these spreads are getting so tough. Maybe the Cards are a team you need to just keep on the back burner and wait for that prime matchup, because there's just some players there. I mean, Adrian Peterson, some flashes. As I mentioned, Chandler Jones. Honey Badger's still alive. Patrick Peterson. There's some pride on this defense, and I think there's, like I said, there's maybe just something there out in Arizona.
Well, props to my favorite all-time Cleveland Brown, Phil Dawson, for nailing that 57-yarder for Arizona there to give them the win. And, you know, for the Cardinals here, 3 catches for 12 yards for Larry Fitzgerald. Team-high 8 targets, but he's only able to haul in 3 of them. If you're Jacksonville, that's really not a game that you want to lose. I mean, obviously you don't want to lose any game, but if you can shut Larry Fitzgerald down and still find a way to lose the game, that's kind of demoralizing in my opinion. You know, Leonard Fournette, very ineffective, just 12 carries for 25 yards. Bortles was the only guy that could run for Jacksonville in this game with the scramble. And, you know, I think that it's one of those things where I think it's an interesting contrast between teams. You've got this veteran Arizona team that knows how to win, knows how to persevere through some of those tough spots. Yeah, they've had a couple of down years here because of injuries and because some things just, you know, all right, haven't gone their way. They've been kind of a team that's run bad in those coin flip types of games at the end. But they pull out this one. And like you said, they're still out there fighting. What's fascinating to me, though, as we kind of take a peek ahead to week 13 a little bit, it almost feels like this win didn't mean anything in the betting market. Arizona, still a touchdown home dog to the Rams. So we talk about perception biases in the NFL. We talk about, you know, looking at things on a week-to-week basis. The Rams beating New Orleans. New Orleans, obviously, you know, a top team here in the NFC this year. They got pumped up a little bit from that win in terms of what this line looks like in the betting market. I mean, Jacksonville was laying 5.5, 6 in that game. Now the Rams laying 6.5, 7. Are the Rams better than Jacksonville? I don't know. Is it a travel situation to where the Rams have a shorter trip? I don't know. But what I do know is that it doesn't look like Arizona's getting the respect that you're alluding to from a betting value standpoint here. So they could be, you know, maybe a little bit of a live dog here this week.
There's no doubt about it. And if anyone thinks the Rams are just going to keep on racking up points, this is a defense that they've seen them before. They got a pretty, what was it? I think they got shut out. It was 0-0 losing to the Rams. So there's a little revenge factor there. Yeah, I don't think they're getting enough respect, and I just like the rest of the way kind of thing. Playing Tennessee, playing the Redskins, a Giants team you don't know what you're getting out of. Just a lot of opportunities I think that could arise for that group. And yeah, definitely, it's you mentioned it, they're not getting respect in the line just on the look ahead to this week.
All right, I know you're kind of dreading this point because the Denver Broncos are your team despite living in Indianapolis. So you do follow the Colts closely, but Denver is your team here. And you know, just another ugly loss for Denver. I mean, Paxton Lynch kind of looks okay at the outset. Then some things don't really go his way. Trevor Siemian winds up coming into this game and threw a couple of touchdowns, but again, just 11 of 21 passing. Oakland, kind of a workmanlike 21-14 win here in this one to pick up a nice victory after that ugly game against the Patriots. But man, at this point, what do you do with Denver? I mean, this is a team now that's 3-8, a team that's accustomed to winning. It's the opposite of a Jacksonville situation where Jacksonville trying to learn how to win, trying to move up into that next tier. Denver here, a team that has won, a team that's gotten a Super Bowl over the last couple of seasons. And now they're just sort of in free fall mode. And I don't know when they actually hit the bottom.
Well, they got to be close. The son of John Denver has to be fading Denver. I mean, I love how they can't admit that Trevor Siemian right now is the best option. But that's not even the problem. I like to look at players who just totally sway the line. If they're not playing, and then you just don't make the bet, but that they're one player is Von Miller. He's MIA. I think he's got a sack, maybe a sack and a half in the last five games. He is on the side of your little milk carton there. It's embarrassing. He's supposed to be that team deodorant that fixes the tonic for the bad team. What do you call it? The stir that straws the drink, whatever it is. He's not anything. He's not the best player on the field. He's far from it. And coaching's one thing. Dropping Von Miller in coverage is beyond me. I don't understand that theory, and I never will. One of the best pass rushers in the league. I'm not dropping him in coverage, except for the rare exception, just to fool somebody. But be that as it may, it's the whole new coaching. Paxton Lynch is one thing. Some decent throws, a lot of it was just check downs, hitting over the middle, crossers. He got a nice wheel route that probably should have been a touchdown, but I think it's not a serious injury. I think he just got benched for bad play, and people were like, oh, this is hurting his confidence, this injury. I think it's like the actual poor play. That's why he's crying on the sideline. The kid probably got a little nice dose of reality. This is one of the worst defenses you're going to play in the Raiders, who just switched up their defensive coordinator. They got issues at corner. They can't stop the pass, can't stop the run, and you didn't really do anything. So I think that's kind of a really smack in the face to Paxton. Hopefully, he rebounds from this. But that's the problem this year. Like, they're just going to be bad. They totally lost their identity, I think, on defense. The Aqib Talib fighting and yanking chains, I mean, heck, that's been going on since last year. But at least we kind of had control of the roster. I think Vance Joseph, man, he's got to be ready to get fired. He's got to be a one and done. He's supposed to be some defensive guru, and the Broncos, they don't even resemble last year's team. I think they're one of the worst defenses in the league right now, and it's not because of talent. It's just there's no accountability. There's no leadership, and yeah, I'd be shocked if Vance Joseph doesn't get let go in the offseason, because this is just why you let Wade Phillips out the door is beyond me. But then this whole letting this Vance Joseph come in here, he wasn't even that good at Miami. So I just, yeah. John Elway, it's all on him right now. He's built himself a fine mess is the problem.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think what's also really difficult for this team is that, you kind of look at the dispersion of the targets that they had in the passing game, and there's just nothing downfield. You've got checkdowns to Devontae Booker. You've got checkdowns to Jamal Charles. C.J. Anderson wasn't really a factor in this game. And if he's not a factor right now, he's probably the best offensive player for Denver, with the injuries to Emmanuel Sanders and then with Demaryius Thomas pretty much ineffective with the quarterbacks that are there. And Demaryius Thomas' longest catch yesterday, he had 5 catches. His longest reception was 6 yards. So this Denver offense is just a comedy of errors right now. And like you said, I mean, I don't know what you do from this point forward. I mean, you're almost kind of looking at a full-fledged rebuild situation where, you know, you've got some players on the defense, but they are getting older. The offense is just in dire need of somebody that can captain the ship here, and I don't know if that's a quarterback in this year's draft. I don't know if that's a free agent quarterback that you go out and get. For the Broncos here, I mean, they're fading until further notice at this point. I see no way that you can back them in any tangible situation, and yet some books have them a favorite on the road in Miami this week, which is a pretty big indictment of what the Dolphins are as well.
Oh, poor Matt Moore and poor Dolphins backer. That's a whole other story, but I think they are facing a rebuild. The only way is they look in the mirror, be honest, and say, okay, Paxton Lynch was a mistake. I'm sorry. Hey, self, I'm sorry about that. And, hey, put Kirk Cousins out there. He's not going to re-sign with Washington because of that contract. He has to go somewhere. If you get the veteran quarterback, maybe the new coach has worked with Cousins. That safety would be nice. Morgan Burnett's not going to resign with the Packers. That's another veteran you might add to the mix. But yeah, outside of hitting all sevens with a free agent quarterback, I think they are looking at a rebuild. And I hate to repeat it, but they really have to be honest with themselves and just look at this whole quarterback room and say, eject. Just hit the eject button and start from scratch, I think. Maybe you keep Chad Kelly. But outside of that, I don't like anybody in this room right now.
All right, let's talk about the Atlanta Falcons here. As I mentioned, they front-doored any Tampa Bay backers with that touchdown around the two-minute warning yesterday in the fourth quarter. 368 passing yards on this Tampa Bay secondary. And this Tampa Bay secondary has just been a problem all year long. As I mentioned, Julio Jones, he went out there, had a huge game, 12, 253, a couple scores. Trick play from Mohamed Sanu was a big part of it as well. But I look at this Falcons team, and they're 7-4, and you know they had that big second quarter here to put this game away, and Matt Ryan seems to be getting more comfortable. Week after week, the completion percentage looks a little bit better. He looks a little bit more comfortable in the pocket. You know, they're starting to find ways to get Julio Jones the football, which is obviously the most important thing here with this offense. But you're not sold on the Falcons. Neither am I, but you're the guy with the talent evaluation background and the scouting background. So what is it that you're seeing from Atlanta here that doesn't really have you buying in?
Oh, yeah, I mean, Lee Corso would have his pencil with the not so fast here, right? I mean, I don't think you have to be any guru or quarterback whisperer to know Julio Jones is the best player on the field. It's just the real question is why it takes Steve Sarkisian this long. I mean, sure, credit to him. He's obviously fine-tuned some things. I mean, there's a lot of concepts he's got to change, I'm sure, just to kind of acclimate to the pro game and the pro players probably. But the finer points out of Mohamed Sanu showcase that what a great season he's enjoying. And then Tevin Coleman, we've said it on the show before, that kid's the star himself, even without Devontae Freeman. But they should have kicked the snot out of Tampa Bay. Right now, they're a terrible team. They're missing a lot of corners. Tampa Bay is just a beat-up team, too. They've got the talent to just road grade them if they wanted, pass if they wanted. And they did. They passed it well with Julio. Good for them. But they're just something still there. It's like a friend you work with. You know they're sick. They don't want to fess up to and admit it, but, you know, they got to finish out that week of work. Well, everybody knows you've got something, bro. And, like, that's what I tell the Falcons, too. Man, there's a flu virus or something. You know, just go get checked up because and I think it's on defense. I mean, they're trying to get that Seattle thing going, and I have praised their team speed in the past, but that side of the ball still doesn't have – I want to say it's not the attitude. It's still the physicality. They don't beat people up on the front line. They don't have that heavy front rotation, and the front four is the biggest issue. So Dan Quinn can dial up any blitz he wants. It's not going to be as effective without Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill, back at all those rotational players they had. It's this is a team that's just skeptical and, you know, looking up. They've given up points to bad offenses. I mean, Tampa shouldn't really score 20. Carolina, the Jets, Miami, Buffalo, looking at it, they've all scored 20 or more against this Falcons team. So I just – you have to wonder what happens when they play a real team. What happens when you play Minnesota? They still haven't played the Saints at all this year. So this is a Falcons team, you know, good for them that they've kind of pulled out of it on offense, and you did realize that Julio Jones is not just the best player on your team, maybe one of the best in the league. But, yeah, there's just got to be more, and I'm not sold on Marquand Manuel calling this whole thing. And, yeah, what is it next week? If it's the Vikings, -3 at home. I mean, I'm eating that up right now. Give me some hunting glasses because I'm on Mike Zimmer's side, and we're gonna get some deer after this.
Yeah, and you can kind of see in the market out there a little bit. Atlanta opened 3 with extra juice, and now it's 3 with extra juice on Minnesota, and looks like we got a shot to go down to 2.5 here. And I think that you're on the right track with that. And also the Falcons play the Saints twice in 17 days. Once on a short week, that one's at home. Then they play them again on Christmas Eve on a short week after playing on the road at Tampa Bay. So we're going to find out a lot about Atlanta here over the next 4 games, because that Tampa Bay spot becomes a little bit of a sandwich, albeit with extra rest, with the 2 Saints games in there. And then, you know, who knows what the status of Carolina is going to be on New Year's Eve. So for Atlanta here, these last 5 games, very, very tricky. You look at what they've done to date over the last few weeks, you know, struggled with the Jets on the road, lost to Carolina on the road, needed a second half flurry to knock the Cowboys off once Sean Lee left that game. You know, won at Seattle, but Seattle is a team that has a lot of issues, as we've talked about already. And this Tampa Bay game, like you said, not as impressive as the score might indicate. So, you know, for the Falcons, we're definitely going to find out some things over these last 5 games of the year. All right, let's talk Chicago Bears here for a minute. I was on the Bears in the Super Contest, mostly because I figured at some point Philadelphia needed to drop off a little bit. I also thought Chicago's defense would play fairly well, but Chicago's defense at this point, just so worn down with the fact that the offense completely lacks any level of efficiency whatsoever.
They can't get any time off. You hit the nail on the head there. But I do not give up on coaches that I love. And Vic Fangio, he's got to be given some credit to doing what he's done here. And they ran into a buzzsaw last week. I mean, it's traveling to Philadelphia and getting your ass kicked by the Eagles. That's happened to a lot of teams this year. You go to Philly and you come out with a black eye and a broken jaw. Well, that's, you know, a lot of people have had that same scenario. I think that Eagles, if you look at them on defense too, they may be one of the best tackling teams in the league. Even when the Bears made plays, they were just wearing an Eagles coat as soon as they had the ball. So it's, you know, good luck for anybody on the rest of that Philly schedule. But I still think that defense, the point of attack, they're winning a lot of plays. And those corners on the Bears don't have a lot of talent, but they're jumping routes. They're stripping the ball. They got an early fumble on LeGarrette Blount. What they're missing is that Leonard Floyd. It'd be nice if he was on the edge. He definitely, you know, when he's not in there, makes an impact. But as long as they've got Akeem Hicks, that big defensive lineman healthy, and they still have those running backs, it's a team I just hate to give up on because, yeah, sure, they didn't run for anything, but when you're down 24, nothing at half, it's tough to get any running game going. And Trubisky, I think it's a matter of finally getting these receivers to stay healthy, one, and develop those tight ends. I'm still screaming for my man, Adam Shaheen, out of Ashland. This guy is going to be a playmaker. It's just a matter of when. But, yeah, it's just Dell Loggins, Vic Fangio. Sure, John Fox is a goner. This team may be lost, but those are 2 assistants. I think it's similar to what's going on in Dallas right now. You basically have Jason Garrett as the eye candy, and then Scott Linehan's behind him actually running the offense and coaching. And then on the defense, it's Marinelli running that cover too now. So I think it's kind of similar. This Vic Fangio is doing a great job coaching. I love Dell Loggins. So I think for whatever it's worth to listeners, those are 2 assistants. You want to just kind of earmark right now, find out where they go. I think they're going to continue to do some good things, not only in the future, but I'm just glancing at the Bears' schedule, San Francisco, at Cincinnati, at Detroit, against Cleveland in those next 4 games. I'm still ready to – maybe I'm just a glutton for punishment, Adam, but I'm ready to get behind these Bears and take some points if I can get them with a team I know can keep some games close, because I think there's some value to be taken off of just getting that spanking from Philly, because a lot of teams are going to get that. Now swoop in, you know, maybe get yourself a couple extra points on the Bears.
Yeah, I think it's challenging. I mean, the Bears opened a 5-point favorite this week against San Francisco. That number's down to 3.5. And the biggest problem I have with the Bears right now, I like Vic Fangio. I love Dowell Loggins. We've talked about that before. I even saw Jeff Dickerson over at ESPN.com speculate that maybe John DeFilippo would be a good guy to bring in as the head coach. He's currently the Philadelphia quarterbacks coach, as somebody to work with Mitch Trubisky, or maybe you elevate Loggins the head coach, some kind of thing like that. Loggins and DeFilippo worked together in Cleveland, so you know, maybe that little bit of familiarity would help. But the problem is, I'm not going to say the Bears have quit, because they've played, you know, some fairly competitive games here. Lost to the Saints by 8, lost to the Lions by 3. You know, that game against the Packers at home was a pretty ugly one. But I do wonder what the mental state of this team is, with a lame duck head coach in John Fox, with, you know, probably what appears to be a pretty act season in terms of free agency. You know, they're going to draft high. I just kind of wonder, you know, they are playing some dregs here the rest of the way, specifically San Francisco and Cleveland, but I just wonder what the mindset is of this team to go out there and win games like that, and especially to do so laying points, because they're going to close a favorite against San Francisco this week, maybe a field goal, maybe 2.5. They're going to be a favorite over Cleveland. Everybody's a favorite over Cleveland. But you have to wonder, is this team motivated to go out there and win football games? And I don't know if I can answer that right now.
No, it's a major question mark. The only thing I stick to is a lot of these players still have families to feed, and they've got to know, just like, yes, they are out of it, they're going to be drafting high, but just as we mentioned, John Fox is out, this coordinator, that coordinator out, everyone, they clean house. It's not just a new coach. It's a new system. It's a new regime. It's a new survival. So they're forced to get some good footage out there if they can in these last few games. And I think that if you're an evaluator, speaks out louder than anything. It's like, yeah, this game's over. This season's over. The whole year is done. And look at how hard this cat is playing. He stripped this ball. He fumbled. You know, it just it's something I think that still holds true with pros. In college, of course, I mean, like, that's my senior year, I'm getting ready for the draft, two fingers, I'll see you later. But in the pros, there's still some room for guys that have to, like I said, just for survival's sake, put good footage out there.
A lot of good insights on today's show from Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible. What's going on over at the Bible right now, Joe?
Oh, well, we've got the John Blair back with his Inside the War Room series. So every week you get that probably at the end of the week. We've got our daily scouting reports. And right now, underclassmen have started declaring, as I mentioned, just making their draft decisions. So we'll have our breaking news segment fired up. You can check it all out at NFL Draft Bible.
You can follow Joe on Twitter at Joe W. Everett and at NFL Draft Bible. Joe, thank you so much for your time, man. We really, really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, looking forward to it.
Good stuff there on the NFL from Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible. One more guest, couple of different sports we're going to talk about here on today's show. That is Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
Going pretty good, man. Certainly a busy time of the year here. You know, as a handicapper, there's so many things going on right now. So it's great as a fan. It can be difficult as a handicapper with so many different things going on. But 16-5 in my last 21, so it's been nice to be on a nice little heater here up late.
Yeah, and it's especially challenging because you're trying to play a little bit of catch-up with college basketball. I think normally you feel like you're a little bit more advanced at this point in the season, but timing is everything in life, as we know. And, of course, you got sick right at the start of the college basketball season, and I know that your children have been battling some things as well. So, you know, when it is a heavy time of year like this, where you've got all this college football, you're still looking at NBA and NHL, and then you've got college basketball, and, you know, we talk about this all the time with the number of teams that there are in college. How are you keeping your head above water? I mean, what are you focusing on here, you know, at this time of the year with the majority of your time?
Well, I mean, you know, football drives the bus, as we say, in the industry, and I have to stay very focused on football. You know, I've spent a lot of time still on college football, quite a bit of time on the NFL. Certainly that's still where the majority of my time is going. As far as college basketball, what I've tried to do is, you know, specialize on totals here of late. You know, totals are certainly, I'm a lot better at totals than I am at sides, especially in college basketball. You know, I started the year off slowly in college basketball, and now I've won my last seven plays in college basketball. I believe all of those were totals. You know, I've been trying to play the angles that I know are really strong angles early in the season with, like, the neutral site unders and things like that. You know, like you said there, I would say most years I know more about a bunch of these teams than what I do right now for college basketball. And that's why my volume's been lower, but I've been able to do well just by sticking to what I know the best. And you know, you can't know everything about every team, especially when, you know, you get hit with sicknesses, like you said. You know, I'm feeling better than I was, but the kid's still not doing well. And, you know, you got to be a dad first. And you know, there's a lot of different sports going on, as we said. So, you know, I try not to be an expert in every single thing. Or try to, you know, stretch myself too thin. So try to keep it simple and focus in on the things where I believe I have an edge.
I think, honestly, I mean, it may work out for you in the long run. We'll have to revisit this topic, you know, once we see how things are going with college basketball. But, you know, early on in the year is when you feel like you do a lot of preseason work, when you feel like you can get edges in an inefficient market. But sometimes it's not the worst thing in the world to kind of ease into it a little bit, get a better idea of what we're seeing, because ultimately early on in the year, you do your research, you have your expectations, you think you know how things are going to go. Obviously, it doesn't always play out that way. But, you know, with specializing in what you're good at, specializing in the conferences that you know really well, and then specializing in some of those neutral site angles, you know, that stuff that can really help you, can boost up the bankroll, can help the clients as you're doing that research behind the scenes to familiarize yourself with some more of these teams. So honestly, I think it may kind of be a blessing in disguise, so to speak. And obviously I hope your children are feeling better. But you know, it could be one of those things where circumstances actually wind up helping you a little bit more. There may be no way of knowing that, because we don't know how you would have started the season if you were able to dedicate, you know, a similar amount of time to what you usually do. But still, I think that it may, you know, wind up being something that does work out for you. And we talk about this all the time, that as a handicapper, it's all about adapting and adjusting. And, you know, I've said this before on the show here within the last couple of weeks, that I honestly feel like in-game is, you know, really the future of the industry, and it's going to be the way that everybody goes about doing this. And you have to make the adjustments to that. But also you have to make year-to-year adjustments, because not all of these seasons are going to be the same.
Right, absolutely. You have to adjust based on what's going on in your life and adjust what's going on in the markets as well. So, yeah, I feel like that's what I'm trying to do here. And obviously, you know, you look at a month from now, I'll know a lot more about a bunch of these teams in college basketball. But, you know, I am learning about these teams as we go. And, you know, as anybody should, I've just been trying to watch as much college basketball as I can. You know, so even sometimes when I'm sitting up with the kids at night, you know, just watching some of the games that are on and learning about these teams and, you know, making some notes as far as the future, because, you know, you watch some of those games, you find out about tendencies of the teams, and, you know, you learn something that can try to help you on your next bet.
All right, well, let's get into the college football side of things here, and then we've got some listener requests and some listener questions on the college basketball side that we'll wrap up with. Let's start with this Friday night conference championship game in the Pac-12. Stanford takes on USC, and USC a 3-point favorite here this game at a neutral site in Santa Clara, California, home of the San Francisco 49ers. So, you know, not any real home field advantage to be gained here in this one. But, you know, I think this is a really tricky handicap, because you've got this Stanford team with a banged up Bryce Love. We know it. They know it. Everybody knows it. You've got this USC team, though, that hasn't lived up to expectations this year. Sam Darnold, you know, probably hasn't had the type of season that everybody expected. Clay Helton, you know, kind of hit or miss there with him. You do have a head-to-head meeting to look back to here, but that was all the way back in week two. And I think that's kind of a starting point here, Kyle, to discuss some of these conference championship games is, you know, a lot of times these teams have played each other throughout the course of the season. So how much stock do you put in that first matchup?
Well, I don't put too much stock in that first matchup right now because, like you said, it's so long ago. I mean, if you look at that game, USC completely dominated that game, had more than 600 yards of offense. This Stanford defense has certainly gotten better since then. And I think that David Shaw has proven himself as a very good coach. I know he's had some bad moments and in-game spots, but his teams get better throughout the course of the season. I would give Stanford a coaching edge in this game. And as you said, I think USC has certainly not played up to expectations so far this year, especially in the passing game. I think their offensive line has been a disappointment, and that certainly played a role in Darnold not looking as good. Like you said, it makes it tricky that Bryce Love is not playing at 100%. If Love were playing at 100%, well, first of all, the line probably wouldn't be what it was. But I would like Stanford more in this one. I think that it would be a mistake to read too much into that first game. You know, it was at USC, and it was a really long time ago. I feel like Stanford has improved quite a bit since then. Stanford's best wins are at home, of course, and this is not a home game. But I feel like Stanford can run on USC. You know, USC's run defense has not been very good this year. And, you know, even Bryce Love being hobbled, he's still been playing pretty well. And, you know, I've said this in the past on Twitter, and I'll say it again. I think Bryce Love's the best player in the country this year. He's not going to win the Heisman. He probably should. But I think, you know, he's really done a really good job, even though he's not playing at 100%. I think Stanford's defense is quite a bit improved from what they were before. My lean here is to take Stanford in the points. I will say this is not a very strong lean. I think, you know, the public's going to want to take USC here in this one, though I don't know how heavily. It'll be interesting to see how much sharp action there is on Stanford here.
I do think there will be a little bit of a sharp versus public split in this game. This number opened 3, and it's 3 minus 15 pretty much all across the market here. So USC getting a little bit of the initial nibbles, but obviously this number hasn't moved off of 3. And one of the things that stands out between the first game and the second game here, KJ Costello didn't play the second game for Stanford. And a lot of people believe that he's an upgrade to Keller Crist. And obviously I think that there's a decent amount of evidence that would suggest that that probably is the case. I mean, really, if you're a Stanford quarterback, you're simply out there to complete a few play action passes, extend drives on 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7, and then let the running game and the offensive line take over. Costello against Notre Dame, only 14 of 22, but 4 of those 14 completions went for 6. So, you know, I think that this is also a situation where Stanford has been upgraded a little bit with KJ Costello, both from an actual performance standpoint and also from a power rating standpoint. So it really wouldn't shock me here to see this become a sharp versus public game with, as you mentioned, the public on USC and the wiser guys taking Stanford.
No, that wouldn't surprise me either. And, you know, now that we have actual total numbers to talk about as well, I would say I think this total may be a little bit too high. Both of these teams play relatively slow. Stanford certainly plays at a very slow pace. That first game influencing the number here a little bit. You know, they got to 66 in the first game. We've seen Stanford slow the game down, use up the clock, really long drives, a lot of running. I think they'll do that again here. USC's passing game was really good in that first game. They probably won't have as much success there. So, my slight lean here would be to the under, just from a number standpoint as well.
No, I think that makes sense. I mean, right now you're looking at this total 57.5. The total was 55 for the first game between these two teams. As you mentioned, that one did go over the number. And another thing about it, too, is when you have these Heisman hopefuls early on in the season, like a Bryce Love, like a Sam Darnold, you want to try and give them as many opportunities as possible to strengthen that case. In this game, with the Heisman already decided and going to Baker Mayfield, you don't have to worry about that as much. You know, you're still going to put the ball in the hands of your best personnel, which would be Love and Darnold. But, you know, maybe the tempo does slow down a little bit more for this game, especially if it's close late, one team nursing a lead, something like that. You know, the I don't want to say expectations, but, you know, the mindset changes from a regular season game to a conference championship game, where you're talking about a better bowl game, you're talking about some program hardware, you're talking about maybe a recruiting windfall, some kind of thing like that. So, you know, I think that because we saw that first game go over, like you said, there's a little bit of an inflation on the total for this game, and I think this game just plays a lot differently than a run-of-the-mill Week 2 regular season game.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think as you see the game mean more to both teams and the intensity goes up. In general, that helps the defenses, you know. And like you said, this one's a little bit higher than the total was there in week two. My lean here is the under.
Speaking of high totals, I know you're going to be very excited to play back on the under for this one. Between Memphis and Central Florida, 85.5 is the total for this game. Spread Central Florida -7. Juice pretty standard across the market at -115. So, you know, it's an interesting spot for both of these teams because obviously everyone remembers Central Florida beating Memphis in that game that had to be rescheduled because of the hurricane. Memphis wound up being in a pretty bad spot for that one. Central Florida, that was really the only hallmark win that they had up until last week's game against South Florida. They needed a kick return touchdown in a very back-and-forth affair against the best team that they played since Memphis to win that game. So are you surprised to see this line either side or total where it is?
Well, I mean, from a total standpoint, you know, I mean, you have to set the number really high here. First of all, public's going to take the over in a big way. And both of these teams play so fast that there's going to be a ton of possessions here. Having said that, there's no way I could play over 85.5. I mean, that's just it's just way too high. I mean, that's you've got to put up some really high points every single quarter. One bad quarter and you lose that over. I can't do that. Having said that, you know, do I like to take the under? No, I don't want to take the under here either. I'm going to pass on this total. I like the side better. I like Memphis some here, especially if you can get 7.5, which I think there are a couple 7.5s with extra juice, and I think there will probably be some 7.5s at some point throughout the week. Obviously, getting 7.5 points doesn't mean quite as much when you have a total of 85.5, but still, more than a touchdown with a team in Memphis that I believe has improved a lot since that first game. And, you know, UCF was outplayed by quite a bit in much of that game last week against USF. USF had 653 yards in that game, 7.77 yards per play, a little bit of a misleading final. And, you know, UCF maximized their trips into the red zone and won that game. But this UCF defense has shown quite a bit of flaws here of late, and I think Memphis can expose them quite a bit here.
No, I completely agree. I mean, I wanted to play on Memphis to begin with, and I wanted Central Florida to look really good against South Florida. I do have South Florida in a team wins pool, so I was hoping they'd find a way to pull that one out. But from a betting standpoint for this game, I wanted Central Florida to look really good. It certainly didn't help that Memphis hung a 70 burger on East Carolina, but I mean, that doesn't really influence too much of anything because East Carolina is terrible. But the fact that Central Florida gave up 503 passing yards on 24 completions, South Florida had 21 yards per catch in that game. That's not great, especially when you take on an offense led by Riley Ferguson. Now, you do have some interesting coaching situations here in this game. Scott Frost going to take a Power 5 job, Mike Norvell being talked about for a Power 5 job. So you do have two coaches here that you kind of wonder what the state of their mindset is. You kind of wonder where the players are looking. Now, Norvell, I saw yesterday that there were some talks that he may be looking to extend with Memphis, which is a very big surprise there. But, you know, I think that it's such an interesting handicap because you have this high-scoring game. You have a last team with the ball wins potential situation. You've got Memphis getting blown out early in the season in this game, where Central Florida opened, I think, 2.5 or 3, number closed 5.5. I don't see any reason why this number should be a total or be a touchdown with reduced juice or the 7.5s that are out there. Honestly, if I look at the body of work from when these two teams last played, I'm more impressed with what Memphis has done. I mean, Central Florida lost 3 of the last 4 games against the spread as their numbers got higher and higher, as their perception got higher and higher. You know, Memphis is mostly covered almost every game. They failed to cover by 0.5 against Navy on October 14th, found a way to come back against Houston. I like this Memphis team a lot, and I'm hoping to catch a 7.5 out there as the week goes along. I don't know if I'll sprinkle the money line necessarily, but I think the Tigers are the right side here.
Yeah, I think so too. And like you said, UCF has actually not played as well of late. They had that close win at SMU. At Temple, I believe they were outgained in that game. Temple turned it over a bunch of times. And then last week, they were really outplayed by South Florida. You know, Memphis, I think, has really came on and played a lot better as the season's gone on. UCF started the season really strong, and it's been, you know, good of late, but not great. So I think this number's too high.
All right, well, let's go to the Conference USA Championship game here, game 315-316 on the board. North Texas takes on Florida Atlantic. Florida Atlantic up to a 10.5-point favorite, standard minus 110 out there in the marketplace. And this is another one that's interesting because you've got a previous matchup between these two teams. Florida Atlantic with a very nice win hung 69 points in that one, 69-31. But North Texas was in basically the worst spot that they had all season, possibly the worst spot in college football of the year. Off that big UTSA comeback win, Mason Fine got his ass kicked all game long. He took a beating, including on the final play that won them the game. Just an awful, awful spot for the Mean Green. Going down to Boca, lost by 38. It seems like that one may have a little bit of an influence on this number as well.
Yeah, you know, Jeffrey Wilson is out for this game. North Texas is running back. They do have some good running backs still available, so I think that hurts them some. Mason Fine's really good. You know, I think he's going to be really, really good in this system going forward. Florida Atlantic's defense is not likely to be able to stop North Texas here. Having said that, I do wonder, you know, I mean, Florida Atlantic put up over 800 yards of offense in this first game between these two. This is a total that I would still lean to the over on. I think, you know, I'd like it to be lower, and I played the over the first time these two played at a number that was quite a bit lower than this. But I still think there's going to be a lot of points in this game. Florida Atlantic's rushing game, very, very good. North Texas can't stop the run. North Texas should be able to throw on Florida Atlantic. You know, I don't see either team stopping each other very much. I really don't have a lean from a side standpoint that much. I do think this number is probably a little bit too high numbers-wise. My number is a little bit smaller than this. But, you know, like I said, North Texas a little bit banged up. You know, it'd be interesting to see, you know, we obviously don't know this far ahead, but what's the weather going to be like? How much wind? You can get some wind in places like this sometimes. And then also you have you know, Florida Atlantic that relies on the run game, North Texas more on the pass game, especially with Wilson out. That would help Florida Atlantic a little bit. And like you said, you know, the thing, if you like North Texas was in a really bad spot in that first game. And the line may be a little bit inflated because of that first game, as you said. Certainly the public's going to take Florida Atlantic here. I see, you know, already 73% of the bets are on Florida Atlantic here. And, you know, those are probably not too many public players. But I think that Florida Atlantic will take most of the bets here. I imagine some people will want to take North Texas plus the points here later in the week. It'll be interesting to see what happens with this line.
Yeah, it will. And I like both coaches here. I mean, I think Lane Kiffin's done a phenomenal job at Florida Atlantic. And Kendall Briles, I mean, say what you will about what happened at Baylor and if he should have a coordinator position. But you know, he has done a good job putting this offense together. And Florida Atlantic's offense did start a little bit slow. I mean, keep in mind, this is a team that lost to Buffalo. Wasn't the greatest of spots, but this is a team that lost to Buffalo early on in the year. And then they've just basically bludgeoned almost everybody in conference play with the exception of Marshall. They did have that game covered. We all remember how that one played out. And apologies to anybody that was on Florida Atlantic in that one. And I'm opening up some bad wounds there. But, you know, a lot of credit to both of these coaching staff. Seth Luttrell's done a phenomenal job in Denton with North Texas. And we'll see how long it takes him to upgrade his job. Maybe even this year, taking one of those open group of five spots, maybe in the AAC, something like that. So, you know, two really good coaches here. One thing that is interesting about this game is that you mentioned the total adjustment already. It was 67 was the closing number when these two teams played October 21st. But the line was 3.5. And that was with North Texas in a really terrible spot. The spot's not bad here at all. Jeffrey Wilson, probably 1.5, maybe 2 points to this number in terms of a power ratings adjustment for North Texas, just because he's been such a potent running back, even when they weren't very good. But to see this number adjust by a touchdown, I know maybe North Texas's body of work isn't all that great. You know, they gave up 49 to Army. They barely beat Louisiana Tech on the road, although they were a dog. Couldn't cover against Old Dominion after that Florida Atlantic game. But a touchdown adjustment seems like a lot here. That's not to say I'm going to play North Texas, but this is one where there's some recency bias built into this number.
Yeah, I agree with you. I didn't realize it was that big an adjustment as far as the side. And I remember that total before. I got bet up really hard. I think I got over 61 or 61 and a half or something like that at the open, and then it went up pretty quickly. You know, as far as the total, I still think I like the over a little bit, like I said. I don't think I'll play it this time. And on the side, I think I'll probably pass here. I don't know if North Texas can stop Florida Atlantic enough, and, you know, some bad things can happen when you're throwing the ball a lot. So I don't know if I trust North Texas a lot here, but I agree with you. If you're just going from a number standpoint, you know, I think this number should probably be something like 7.5 or 8 instead of 10.5. And so, you know, if you want to get a numbers grab, then couldn't blame you for taking North Texas either.
All right, let's head on down to the Sun Belt here. Troy takes on Arkansas State. This one's kind of a de facto conference championship game. Both of these teams tied at 6-1 in conference. Appalachian State also 6-1. They'll probably beat Louisiana Lafayette. They're a 15-point favorite there in that game. So whoever wins this one looks like they'll share the Sun Belt crown with Appalachian State, at least all of them, or both of them having 7-1 records. But really good game here down in Jonesboro. Troy, 1.5-point dog in this one. Number open 2. So we haven't seen a lot of significant investment as of yet. Total 58.5 for this one. But you know, these are two really solid programs. Arkansas State has certainly benefited from having Blake Anderson there for a few years. Of course, they had Hugh Freeze. They had Gus Malzahn. You know, both of those guys there, and in the blink of an eye, they were gone. So for Arkansas State, you know, nice for them to get a little bit of stability, a little bit of consistency there. But this Troy team, I mean, last year they were the first Sun Belt team to ever be ranked in the top 25, playing very well here over the last few weeks. Arkansas State, you know, kind of struggling a little bit defensively last week, played some dregs before that, lost to South Alabama. So I think this is a kind of a high variance game, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I like Troy in this game. Arkansas State won 35-3 last year when Troy turned it over 5 times. Arkansas State didn't turn it over at all, and that game was at Troy. Arkansas State was plus 10 in that game, so certainly a big surprise. Arkansas State's won 4 years in a row here. I think this is a good revenge spot for Troy. I think situationally, motivation-wise, I like Troy here. And Troy is obviously proven they have a high upside. You know, say what you will about LSU, they ended up having a good season. And Troy went and won at LSU there earlier this year. You know, to me, Troy just has the higher upside of these two teams. And I think they, like I said, they should be extremely motivated for this game. I'm certain they remember last year's game where they lost 35-3 and were completely embarrassed. The thing I will say about that game is Arkansas State only had 388 yards of offense. Now, Troy only had 262. But the final is a little bit misleading because Troy turned it over 5 times. I think Troy's defense is a little bit better than Arkansas State's. I like Troy's motivation level here. I just think this is a really good spot for them to come back, and you know, a team that's beaten them 4 times in a row. Now Troy should be extremely motivated. Troy's only 4-7 against the number so far this year, and I think that has odds makers a little bit low on them because, you know, they got so high on Troy right after they beat LSU, and then Troy has a little bit of a rough patch there, and now they're playing really well again. So I think from a number standpoint, I think Troy is undervalued right here, and I think Troy wins this game.
All right, one thing I want to touch on before we transition over to college basketball for today, obviously the coaching carousel spinning at a rapid pace right now. You got Dan Mullen making the move over to Florida. You've got Chip Kelly at UCLA. You've got what looks like maybe Kevin Sumlin going to Arizona State. You know, Scott Frost is going to wind up somewhere in all likelihood. You have the debacle in Knoxville with Greg Schiano and everything that happened there with that. Just a very busy time of year from a coaching standpoint. We'll talk more about all of them on next week's show, but there's one in particular that I want to look at. And this is one of those head scratchers. I don't know if this winds up being a USC type situation with Clay Helton getting elevated, but the fact that Ole Miss took the interim tag off of Matt Luke was very, very surprising to me, as I'm sure it was to you.
Yeah, and when you started saying that, I knew you were going to say Ole Miss. Yeah, I actually read that one on the bottom of the screen on ESPN yesterday, and I said, wow, you know, just out loud. I'm really surprised by that, you know. Not that he did a bad job necessarily, but I'm just surprised that Ole Miss and the SEC and with some decent tradition there would not try to find a bigger name than that. And I think they probably could have gotten a fairly good name in there. That's not to say that I think that he'll necessarily do a bad job long term, but you know, you wonder if Ole Miss winning that game against Mississippi State had something to do with that. And if it did, it might be a mistake to read too much into that game. You know, Nick Fitzgerald getting hurt right at the beginning of the game. Let's just be honest. I mean, Mississippi State probably would have won that game if he stayed in there. So, you know, I wonder if that had something to do with it, though.
Yeah, I mean, it could have. I think part of it, too, is that with all the Hugh Freeze fallout, you know, you make a decision to go to Matt Luke, and you had two first-year coordinators, offensive and defensive, so you probably weren't going to elevate either one of those guys. So you want to find a guy with a little bit of tenure within the program that knows the personnel and that the players, you know, respect and will rally around. And I kind of feel like it's one of those things where you're a little bit gun-shy. You know, you don't want to go out there and get a big name and possibly wind up embroiled in some sort of scandal down the road. Also, there probably weren't a whole lot of big names interested in this job because the sanctions and the fallout from Hugh Freeze, not just from the escort service thing, but also you and I have talked about on this show before, and no knock on Oxford, no knock on the Grove, no knock on this university, but the really high-level recruiting classes that Hugh Freeze had, it's just naturally going to open up some eyes. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast in college football. So I kind of wonder how much interest there was from some of these bigger names with some of those unknowns of possible scholarship reductions or additional sanctions down the road. So it almost feels like Ole Miss kind of had to make a, pardon the pun, a lukewarm decision here. And maybe they'll look to do something in a year or two once the sanction picture gets a little bit clearer. But you know, also, too, it's such a tough job. You go against Auburn now playing at a very high level once again. Alabama, obviously, if LSU ever finds a quarterback, they're right there. You know, we'll see what happens with Mississippi State with Dan Mullen gone. Texas A&M without Kevin Sumlin, you know, maybe they're a program that actually lives up to its potential with being the only SEC school in Texas. So is this maybe Ole Miss kind of not punting the next 2 years, so to speak, but just sort of, you know, trying not to upset the apple cart? I don't know, but it feels to me like with some of the names that were out there, you kind of want to shoot your shot as long as somebody's interested.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they didn't try anything more than this. And I think it'll be really interesting to see what their recruiting classes look like now the next couple years. You know, how good of a job does he do recruiting? Like you said, you know, Ole Miss has had some really good recruiting classes, and it'll be interesting to see how he does on that side of it.
All right, let's transition over to the college basketball side here, spend some time on that. I know you've gotten a couple of listener questions here about some early season college basketball betting, including looking at some teams to buy low and sell high.
Yeah, and I like doing this. You know, it's one of those stock market indicator type things. And being a guy that likes to follow the stock market, you know, I feel like that's a good way to, you know, look at teams in all sports as well. You know, you got to try to find a team when everybody's low on them that's going to bounce back and try to sell high on some of these teams that can't keep playing the way they have been all year. UIC is the first team I would say. I'm going to give a couple to buy low on and a couple to sell high. UIC, Dikembe Dixon, really talented player. He was out last year. UIC is shooting really poorly so far this year. 40% from the floor, 29% from three-point range. That should improve. UIC has played a couple real good teams here as well early in the season. And I think that UIC just, you know, you look at an ATS standpoint, they're not covering numbers right now. They have a good coach. They have a really good player in Dikembe Dixon. I assume that they're going to start playing better here pretty soon.
So what do you look for then specifically? I mean, do you have target numbers in mind in the market when these lines come out? Are you looking to, you know, do you think that there's a recency bias or a perception that comes into play? What I know you expect the team to get better, but, you know, in a more tangible sense, what are you looking for in terms of the lines?
Yeah, it's hard to say, obviously, but, you know, without seeing a line for their games ahead, it's hard to say, you know, well, this is what I would say is my buy point. And as we said earlier, You know, I'm not as advanced on these college basketball numbers and teams as I would be normally, but what I'm really looking for in UIC is I'm looking for this team to continue to play good defense like they did last year. They haven't played great defense so far this year, but Dikembe Dixon has been a really good defender in the past. He's their best offensive player, and he was out last year. So what I'm looking for is them to play against another team who's not very good, you know, doesn't shoot the ball that well, and UIC to be able to get right. I think that UIC, you know, there's just going to be some spots coming up where you can find a team like them where the odds makers have kind of lowered them quite a bit from getting beaten down a couple times and not covering the number. And I think the UIC team that we will see later in the season hasn't shown up yet. I think that will. From a number standpoint, it's kind of hard to say just without delving into their matchups coming up too much. This is just a team that I feel like will be undervalued here for a couple weeks. And then the next team I wanted to say, St. Mary's, a great coach in Randy Bennett. This team has played some really tough opponents so far this year, and they're 1-4 against the spread. St. Mary's is going to be good again this year. They do what they do. They do it really well. They play slowly. They're really efficient on offense. They take care of the basketball. I think they're going to do that again this season. And I think once we get into West Coast Conference play, St. Mary's going to be covering numbers again. This is a team that can really run up the score based on how efficient their offense is. I know they lost some key pieces from last year, but I expect them to be good again this season.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And you know, those are – it's interesting when you get the mid-majors that wind up having sustained success for a while because, you know, sometimes it has to do with having once-in-a-generation or twice-in-a-generation types of players. But if you're a mid-major that can go out there and play some of those big non-conference games, can go to the tournament, you know, or at least go to the conference championship game against Gonzaga, that resonates with recruits. And that's why teams like St. Mary's, Gonzaga, Wichita State obviously being the most notable example, that's why those teams can do what they do year after year. So I agree with you. It may take some time based on the roster turnover that they have, but, you know, still, this is a program with a really strong pipeline, and that ultimately tends to show through.
Yeah, and it will again this year. It's just a matter of time, and I think St. Mary's is one of those teams. We've talked about this in the past when we do the buy low, sell high. St. Mary's is one of them that I'd look as a long-term look to buy low on. I'm not necessarily saying that I'm going to dive in on them right away, but I do think that long-term, this will be a team that's pretty good against the number, and they're only 1-4 so far against the spread. So good buy low for the long-term. As far as selling high, Washington State, you know, they've won some really nice wins here of late. But, you know, I really don't think Washington State's going to continue to be. I mean, they're 6-0. They beat St. Mary's on a neutral court, which was really impressive. They beat San Diego State last night on a neutral floor. Flynn has been really good for them. Malachi Flynn, a sophomore there, really has led this team really well. I still don't think that Washington State's as good as some of these other teams in the Pac-12. And I think that, you know, when you're undefeated against the spread so far this season, the price has got to get too high on them here for a while. And you see them coming up playing some teams, UC Davis, Idaho, UTEP, some teams that they're going to be favored against UC Davis by quite a bit. They're going to be favored by a lot against IUPUI just based on how well they've done so far this season. And I'm not sure that I would be interested in laying points with Washington State in those spots. This is still a Washington State team that needed overtime to beat Texas Southern in the first game and didn't beat Seattle that handily in the second game. I feel like this is a team that will be laying some big numbers in several games here in the next couple weeks, and I think they'll probably be too big.
No, that makes sense. And it's tough, too. You know, the opposite side of the coin, I talk about mid-majors and their sustainability. When you're in a major conference and you're a bad team, I mean, 2 years ago, Washington State was 9-22. They won one game in Pac-12 play. They were 1-17. You know, last year, a little bit better. So they're on the right track. They were 13-18 last year with six Pac-12 wins. they're on the right track, but still, you have to get to a point in college basketball where, you know, you're able to prove this thing year in and year out. And beating St. Mary's is impressive. Beating San Diego State is impressive. But as we just talked about, St. Mary's isn't the same team. San Diego State hasn't been the same team for a few years now. So, you know, for Washington State, those are big wins. They're good wins for the program. They're good wins to show the progress that they've made. But still, it doesn't make them a trustworthy team.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that Washington State is certainly improved, and I'm certainly not doubting that. But I think that against the number, it's going to be hard for them to cover these spreads going forward, because I don't think they're as good as what they look so far this season. The other one I'm going to say is Central Michigan. The Chippewas have beaten up on some bad competition here in Sam Houston State, Cal Poly. They lost at Michigan 72-65. They beat Cal State Bakersfield, a decent win there on a neutral court on Saturday. Central Michigan's defensive numbers look pretty good this year, and I think those are due to regress. If you look at Central Michigan the last couple seasons, they've been really bad defensively. Last year, Ken Pomeroy had them ranked 345th out of 351 in defensive efficiency. So far this season, you know, they've been pretty good defensively. They're not fouling anybody. They fouled less people committed less fouls than any other team in the country per game. That type of thing will probably regress toward the mean, because the past couple years they've been about average when it comes to fouls. I think this is one of those teams where they lost a lot from last year as well. You remember Keen there at Central Michigan. And, you know, this is just a team that doesn't have the star power that they've had in some years in the past. They play a really, really weak schedule here for a while. They play Jackson State, Southern Utah, UMKC. So maybe they're going to beat up on these teams for a while. But I think that this is a long-term look at fading a team that is likely to have a really good record. So far this year, they've been really good against the spread. And I imagine they'll have a really good straight-up record here in a few weeks when MAC play starts. And I think that could be a good time to look to go against them.
Well, and I love looking at teams like that. We kind of talked about that a little bit last week in terms of teams in college basketball can kind of pump their schedule or pump their records up a little bit because of the schedules that they play. On the flip side, you've got some teams that play just miserable and brutal non-conference schedules. The two that stand out from last year, Mount St. Mary's and Long Beach State, you know, they're just all over the map. They're traveling a ton. They're playing teams that are much better than them, you know, playing four road games in the span of 7 or 8 days. You're not going to win a whole lot of those games. So that is something that's very important here as we get closer to conference play, is looking at, you know, strength of schedule rankings, looking at, you know, adjusted statistics based on the level of competition. That stuff is very important. And I'm glad that you hit on a team like that. And I'm sure those are teams that we'll continue to hit on here over the next few weeks.
Yeah, definitely. I like to look ahead. I know you do as well. You know, I feel like there's spots where you can find these teams where they're going to beat up on some of these really bad teams. And, you know, perception of them has to go up for a while. And then you like to watch that and you say, man, I hope they really run up the score in these games, because I really want to go against them here in a few games when they start playing somebody good. I wanted to say really quickly, I know we usually don't talk about them. Most of their games aren't lined. Texas Southern out of the SWAC so far this year. Look at the schedule they've played. They've played Gonzaga, Washington State, Ohio State, Syracuse, Kansas, and Clemson, all on the road. So Mike Davis's team has kind of been the Long Beach State of this year, where they're just going and traveling, playing a ridiculous schedule. We'll see how it works out for them. Looks like they don't play a game at home until January 1st, so pretty ridiculous schedule there.
Yeah, they don't play a game at home until January 1st. They're playing Oakland later this week, at Toledo, at Oregon, who's obviously a good team, at Baylor, who's another good team, at Wyoming in the altitude, just with one travel day in between against or after that game in Waco. Then they go back to Texas and play TCU. They're going to play the 11th, 14th, 16th, 18th, and then wrap up the road schedule on the 23rd in BYU. So you got game in altitude in Laramie. Then you go down to Fort Worth, another game in altitude in Provo. That is a miserable schedule for Texas Southern. And most of those games are going to be lined because they're playing, you know, really notable competition. So a good team to bring up there as we transition to looking at a couple of games here, and we're going to talk about your thought process, how you sort of go through these games. And again, when we do some of these look aheads with some of these games, we're not going to have lines on them because of the time that we're recording this show. Try to give you a little bit of lead time, give you some thoughts on where Kyle's at for these games. But a good one tomorrow night between Baylor and Xavier, 6:30 Eastern time for this one, top 25 matchup. This is a game that's on your radar.
Yeah, you know, Baylor's a defensive team. Xavier's been really good on offense. These two teams do it a lot different ways, and I like games like this where you have one team that wants to push the tempo, one that wants to slow it down. Xavier plays very fast. Baylor always plays very slow under Scott Drew, and you have to give Scott Drew credit for the fact that his defenses have been really consistently good the last few seasons. Xavier's shooting 66.5% on two-point shots so far this year. You know, Xavier had that really good win at Wisconsin. Wisconsin's certainly not as good this year, but certainly anytime you go to Wisconsin and win, that's an impressive win. They lost last game against Arizona State, gave up 102 points in that game. So it's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back here. They go home and play Baylor. And then what's really interesting to me about this one is Xavier plays Cincinnati the game after that. Obviously, the crosstown rivals, that's a huge game for Xavier. I don't think they'll overlook Baylor because they know that Baylor's really good. But you have to wonder if there's at least one eye looking ahead towards Cincinnati. You know, Baylor, they've been undefeated so far this year. They haven't played for a while. They're going to have a week off before they play this game. They beat Wisconsin on a neutral. They beat Creighton on a neutral. But other than that, they didn't play anybody good in those first few games. But, you know, I think that this is an interesting game to see going forward how good Baylor actually is. I think Baylor's a good team. I think defensively they could give Xavier some trouble here. And my lean here would be the under. I think that Baylor is so good at controlling the tempo and forcing you to play their style of basketball that we probably see a total of something you know, 146, 147. And if it's that high, I would look to lean toward the under, and I may even play it myself.
First true road game for Baylor, so we'll see how they handle that type of atmosphere. And then, of course, Baylor with an interesting – it's not a look-ahead spot for them. It's certainly not in the same breath as Xavier playing the crosstown rivalry. But Baylor plays Wichita State after that, and that'll be a big game once we get to the selection committee process in terms of seeding. So – that'll be one that, you know, Baylor will have circled, a home game there. And also, good to see Wichita State getting somebody to schedule them in the non-conference portion. That's always exciting because that's a team that, you know, consistently gets underranked in the tournament because, you know, nobody wants to play them. And I certainly can't blame, you know, Power 5 conference teams for that, that don't want to play Wichita, don't want to run the risk of racking up that non-conference loss because you're going to lose games in conference play. So you want to try to limit the number of losses as much as possible. One other game that you want to look at here, we'll go all the way out to Thursday night. This one on ESPN, top five matchup between Notre Dame and Michigan State up there in East Lansing. Sparty will be probably a little bit of a favorite here for this one, but you know, again, you always have a reason for the games that we discuss. So what is it with this one?
Well, I like this one because Michigan State coming off that win against North Carolina, where North Carolina shot just a ridiculously low percentage from the floor. There were 72 possessions in that game, and it finished 63-45. So some really, really poor shooting numbers. That was a game on the neutral floor that was a good neutral site under there early in the season. Michigan State's been really good on defense against everybody other than Duke so far this year. And Duke's going to score a lot of points on everybody this season. But, you know, you look at Michigan State, they play against a team here in Notre Dame that is so efficient on offense. Notre Dame every single year is way up there as far as offensive efficiency. They're always in the top 20, usually in the top 10. A few years ago, they were second in 2015 in efficiency on offense. And then in 2016, ninth. Last year, not quite as good, 18th. So far this year, they're third in offensive efficiency, playing against a Michigan State team that so far is fourth in defensive efficiency. So I wanted to talk about this one because I think it's strength versus strength. You know, Notre Dame's defense isn't nearly as good as Michigan State's. And I think that's where Michigan State has the pretty big edge here, is that they can do it on both sides. I think Michigan State will probably be favored by 5 or 5.5 points in this one. I don't have a strong lean in this game. I think it's just going to be interesting to see if Michigan State's defense can continue to be that good. Like I say, you know, Notre Dame is so efficient. Colson's really good as a guy that has the ball in his hands a lot for Notre Dame. And I think Bonzi Colson's certainly one of the best players in the country. He's very efficient. Let's see how Michigan State matches up against him. And then also, you know, Notre Dame has at DePaul, which is, you know, not that tough of a road game. Now they go to Michigan State, their first really difficult road game of the year. It'll be interesting to see what Notre Dame does here in this one. I'm not doubting Notre Dame. I think that was a really good win against Wichita State. But I think that this is a really big test for both teams because Notre Dame coming off a massive win against Wichita State, Michigan State coming off a game against North Carolina where Tom Izzo beats Roy Williams for the first time. So let's see who can keep their success going. And I think, you know, both of these teams are in a little bit of a letdown mode because they're coming off such big wins. So, you know, coaching-wise, I think Izzo and Notre Dame's name escapes me, Mike Bray is a really good coach as well. So two good coaches. We'll see who's best prepared for this one.
Well, we'll do some more college basketball stuff as we go forward here. And, of course, next week, you know, a little bit of a lighter college football schedule with the Army-Navy game, which we will talk about here on the show. And then also maybe look at some bowl season stuff and some coaching stuff. So we should be able to dig in a little bit more to college basketball over the next few weeks. But Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com, what's going on over at the website right now, man?
Well, like I said, a nice run here of late, 16-5 in my last 21, 9-0 in my last 9 basketball plays. I'm starting a special today where I'm going to sell college basketball and NBA totals only for the rest of the season. And most of my volume in both of those sports is in the totals market for $499. So, you know, the season's really young. There'll be a lot of plays on that one. So $499, if you're interested in that, contact me, Kyle at huntersportspicks.com or at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter.
Well, Kyle, always a treat, man. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, man.
Good stuff there on today's show with Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. Coming up on our Tuesday show, or coming up on our Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, a couple of to-be-determined guests here got to reach out, figure out who's going to join us for the Tuesday show. Wednesday, we'll be joined by Brian Leonard and Wes Reynolds. Thursday, Brad Powers and Rolf Michaels. Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment. And Brent, the risk manager from DSI Sportsbook, with this week's version of the Odds Report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.